Well, good evening. It's the 17th of September. I'm Alec Hogg, and here is your Biz News Briefing. Coming up tonight, we look at business confidence, which is improving, and not just the business confidence, or rather the latest confidence index, which is consumer confidence indeed, business confidence going in the right direction, though. We will then hear from Frans Cronier on his keynote, which was extremely upbeat at the Biz News Investment Conference. It really focuses a great deal, though, on what's going to happen at the Government of National Unity. France thinks it's going to hold. Not everybody agrees. One of those trying to put a spanner in the works is Herman Mashaba. My colleague Chris Stain spoke with him today. He wants to bring down the government in Tshwane, which he's a member of the coalition, and to hijack the DA's relationship with the ANC, at least in that area. We'll find out about that a little later. Also coming up, tonight's market commentator, Corky Koyman from Denker Capital, our go-to man when it comes to anything to do with financial services. And we'll hear from Corky about the biggest banking group in the country, FirstRand. He was with the managers today. He'll give us his thoughts on results that were released last week. And then artificial intelligence, a key area for any investor, as those of you who've been following the Biz News portfolio well know, with Palantir. Wow, hasn't that been a winner for us? We will be hearing from our partners at the Financial Times on the next generation tools that have been launched by OpenAI. Hyprop's results were out today. We'll have Corky's thoughts on that. And then look ahead with our partners at Bloomberg to the big interest rate cut decision tomorrow from the United States. And finally, I'll bring you up to date with markets. So lots coming up in the next half hour or so. But let's kick off with the FNB BER Consumer Confidence Index, which jumped from minus 10 to minus 5 in the third quarter of 2024. It recorded its second consecutive 5-point increase. Although the latest reading remains somewhat below the long-term average of the Consumer Confidence Index, which since 1994 has been zero, the reading of minus 5 is the highest that confidence has been since the first half of 2019. Here's today's market commentator, Corky Koyman from Denker Capital, on what he thinks about the Consumer Confidence Index and what we can look out for on it in future.
Even towards the end of this year, if we keep going this way and the government doesn't make mistakes now, then your confidence levels is going to increase. You're going to get foreign investors, and they're already queuing up to start having meetings with our banks. Before the election, there just wasn't any interest in meetings with South African managements, and that's starting to happen again. So you're going to start seeing foreign investors coming back. They're not really back investing in South Africa yet. So as that comes, the market could still have a very good year.
It's so interesting to hear that France saw some foreign investors engaging with banks in South Africa. That's always the first sign. They come into a country, talk to the bankers, find out what the bankers are thinking, really thinking, not just the PR stuff. And then if they like it, they invest. Well, the fact that Corky was in Johannesburg today, he's usually based in Cape Town, well, mostly based on a plane somewhere around the world, is meeting with the FirstRand team, and getting that upfront view is pretty good news indeed. Also good news was at the Biz News conference, where Frans Cronier, who is one of the top political science commentators in the country, he's also the chairman of the board of the Social Research Foundation and one of the most popular commentators on Biz News. Frans Cronier spoke at the Biz News conference last Thursday, and he had a very upbeat message for us. You can go onto Biz News TV and watch the full keynote speech, as well as 40 minutes of question and answers. But for our purposes, we're going to hear a few thoughts from France on the Government of National Unity.
Because you're at an investment conference, some of the flags that you need to watch on its downside to make informed decisions about it. The first comment to make about the GNU is that its structure is its strength. It's a government of national unity, and it is that. But inside that, it's a coalition between the ANC and the DA, and it can be both things. But beneath that, it's something else. It's a deal between the established and the aspirant middle class. And that gives it its strength, because those two constituencies will be the great majorities of any South African election for the next generation, and the interests are aligned. Second point to make is that the deal is very popular among South Africans, and it was popular even before it was struck. I chair one of the country's polling groups. In the run-up to the election, we saw that 60% plus of black voters were strongly supportive or supportive of the idea that the ANC strikes the deal with the DA. On the DA side, the same thing was true, and on the white voter camp, the same thing was true. So it's complete nonsense what you read in the mainstream media, that this was some great sacrifice on the part of both parties, despite the wishes of their constituents. Made this deal that might not hold together because people are inherently opposed to it. So structurally it's sound, and it has significant public support, because public opinion in the country is much more centrist and sensible and moderate than the impression created in the mainstream media. You're at an investment conference, and I've on Alex's show and elsewhere said a lot that this is the best thing that could have happened to the country. So let's go beyond that. Start to look at the flags that risk this thing. There are dissidents around who are not in favor of this deal for various reasons, and they will seek to wreck the deal. Probably into early 2027, we will see the first major stress test, a local government election, followed by the ANC's efforts to pick a new leader. There is no guarantee that the GNU, there's no guarantee, not that it won't survive, there's no guarantee that the GNU survives the contestation. They're all going to go to campaign against each other, all the partners. So then the ANC needs to pick a new leader on the back of that. That's the first major to collect two bumps, but one big bump in the road that this GNU needs to get over. So we can be very pleased with what's happened, and we deserve that, but now we look a bit ahead.
Interesting stuff indeed. Well, not everybody agrees with it, and earlier today, Herman Mashaba from Action SA confirmed that his party will be pulling out of the coalition that has been running the city of Tshwane, to all intents and purposes, or certainly the feedback that we're getting, very successfully. Now, this will give investors a little bit of the jitters. It is a risk, though, for Mashaba and his party, because, as my colleague Chris Dane asked him, what happens if the partnership that we're seeing at the Government of National Unity between the ANC and the DA gets brought down to a metro level? Let's have a listen.
Action SA has taken a firm decision. Come the 26th of September, Action SA is not going to defend the Syria drink in the city of Tshwane. Let him go and negotiate with the ANC like they tried to do behind our back.
So should you, Action SA, go into a coalition with the African National Congress and maybe another party, do you think there are long-term risks? Can you trust the African National Congress not to turn on you later down the line and get back into bed with the DA?
I work with human beings, and human beings will let you down. I can't really give you guarantees that I can trust the Action SA people. It's impossible. I can give you guarantees of how I will behave. One thing, I can give you a guarantee as Herman Mashaba, that I will never steal public monies. I will never lie to anyone. I might really make a mistake in my decision-making process. I'm a human being. I'm fallible. But I will never mislead you. That is why sometimes some people tend to think that I'm a stubborn person. So can I guarantee the ANC? Unfortunately, I cannot. But one thing I can tell you, that right now, the current leadership of the DA, I do not really trust. Will I trust the future DA leadership? There are lots of good people within the DA. Within the next week or so, I'm going to be leading negotiations with the ANC. Are going to be tough. It's not going to be easy because there are certain things that are not negotiable to me, which I'm prepared to walk away in the event that we don't agree. I'm not going to be unreasonable. I think the only thing I'm asking the ANC to do is that if you're going to co-govern with us, we've got to declare corruption public enemy number one. We've got to put in professional people to run our government. We've got to service all communities, suburbs, townships, villages. I don't want a situation where you are saying we must only provide services to certain communities. We must provide services to everyone. So these are things that are not negotiable as far as I'm concerned. So I'm going to be leading those negotiations myself. So being in parliament, not being in parliament is giving me that opportunity to really be able to lead these negotiations. Will they be successful? I hope they are. If not, we've taken a decision to really be on the opposition benches.
Well, interesting stuff. When we saw the latest by-election, and there were more than a dozen and a half that were held around the country, the Democratic Alliance, who Mashaba has now gone head-to-head with, did extraordinarily well. Some of their constituencies were as high as, believe it or not, over 99% of the votes. So it's interesting to see that these voters who went in with Action SA in the 2021 election are now going to be given a different governing party on the basis that, well, I suppose what happens in coalitions, people change their mind. But so far, it hasn't made much of an impact as far as investors are concerned. We will, though, watch and wait. On to the next story, and this is our market commentator for the day. His name is Corky Kooiman. He's from Denker Capital. And Corky, as mentioned earlier, has been meeting with the top team at First Rand. In this discussion, which is a summary of a much longer one that you'll find on BizNews TV, Corky explained to us or gave us some insights into the First Rand results and then looked ahead to the results that we can expect at the end of the month from South Africa's favorite stock, Capitec. Yes, Corky Kooiman from Denker Capital. Corky, lovely to be talking to you between meetings.
I was at the First Rand management meeting discussing their results.
Well, maybe we should start with an overall picture. When I look at First Rand's five-year share price, hasn't gone very much. 28% in 5 years. You're probably not even beating inflation at that kind of level. Does that mean that it's building up momentum maybe for a bit of a surge?
Yeah. Alec, life is always so complicated and you ask the right questions. Okay, so firstly, bear in mind that 2019, before COVID started, and that's more or less 5 years ago, was a very good year, and the market was strong and bank share prices were rallying, so they got a bit too expensive at that stage. So we've seen a derating of all bank shares, in fact, with the exception of Capitec and, in fact, Investec. Well, that's been a different story. But generally, the SA big banks have derated, and also because of the provisions needed for the COVID era, for suddenly when Russia invaded Ukraine and food prices and fuel prices started rising, the rand fell. So there have been a lot of things that ensured or caused low profit growth and low net asset value per share growth. In other words, the bank's profitability were under pressure. And that's really why you've seen this sideways move. Okay, so if we go forward now, then banks like Absa and Nedbank and even Standard Bank are still very mispriced. First Rand is not so mispriced anymore, but it has the highest, best prospects in terms of, you know, high return on shareholder value. So, say our First Rand isn't, I think it will also, all the banks will do well in a falling interest rate environment with growth coming. But the big trick now is going to be what to select. Do you go for the really cheap ones that potentially have problems or smaller, or do you go for the ones that are really a bit expensive but will re-rate a bit as well?
Even if I go back now to 2017, so that's 7 years ago.
Yes.
First Rand share price was about the same level that it's at now. So I hear what you say about it having maybe been overrated ahead of COVID. But isn't it now time to say it's a much bigger company, much bigger balance sheet, and you've now just had the insight of engaging with a management team today. I'm concentrating on First Rand because it's worth 460 billion rand. It's our biggest individual bank in or financial services company. Yeah. It seems cheap with a 5% dividend yield, better than they pay you on their savings account. Yeah. So is it not one that even conservative investors could be looking at?
Maybe just one thing to bear in mind, when you look at the share price return, especially the last 2 years, one must bear in mind the dividend payments as well. And the banks have been on very good dividends. You've had, on average, most probably over those 5, 6, 7 years, you most probably had a dividend yield of, let's say, 5% average. Initially, it wasn't that high, and under COVID, they first had to hold back. But then post-COVID, the dividend yields got as high as 6-7%. So you had very good dividend yields. You must add that back, let's say, a 5% dividend each year over 7 years. That's 35%, and then plus the re-rating. But you are right. I mean, First Rand is a great bank, very well positioned. The UK promises also been overcome as provision for in terms of the investigation into the commission problem there, not for them, but with the industry. And so First Rand will grow shareholder value at, let's say, 20-25% per annum. That's already quite good, even if it doesn't re-rate. So you should do 25% out of First Rand. Some of it you get as a divvy, and then you still get a re-rating. You know that you're with a quality bank. You're unlikely to open the newspaper and say, oh, yes, something negative about First Rand.
50,000 employees and a new chief executive. What do you think of her?
Good. It's a tough job. I asked this morning, Mary, how's it going? And she says, I met Alan Pullinger, the previous CEO, and yes, it looks like he's lost a few years. He suddenly looks so much younger. And I realize it's the stress. You know, we forget the stress of being the CEO of a large organization and, you know, with so many people that you are responsible for, and you've got so many different stakeholders who all put pressure on you, and you've got to make the decisions. Sure, you're surrounded by a good team. Yeah, no, she's learned quickly. What I like about Mary as well, she'll always defer. If there are fellow executives in the room, she'll always defer and say, you know, Marcus or Andres, or what do you think? You know, you get CEOs who always have all the answers, and you know, that's to me sometimes a dangerous sign. But First Rand, I think, stand out on having a very, very good team and what we call very good reserve bench as well.
Mary Vilakazi, half of a power couple of Joburg, with her husband being the Dean of Wits. So you've got a heck of a CEO in there in Mary. You've told us now all about First Rand. We understand the future. A very strong results coming through to support Cookie's view of that. You mentioned Capitec a few times. We've got the results from Capitec coming out in a couple of weeks' time. Are they once again going to surprise on the upside?
Well, it's going to be difficult now because they already had to do a pre-release where the expectations were raised. And then later they updated that pre-release saying, well, it's actually going even better than we thought. And look what's happening with them. They stood back when the consumer was under pressure and tightened the credit criteria. So it looks like their provisions were too high that they made for potential bad debts, and did better, especially on the insurance side. There are quite a few things, new initiatives that they've started, that, you know, that the small business, they just continue to take more market share than they expected and continue to do so. So the problem with Capitec, if you look at it on a global banking scale, in fact, I think at the moment there are only like three banks that are more expensive. One is Nubank, as I mentioned, and that's sort of a relatively new player. And I think there's one in Kazakhstan, Kaspi, but like Tinkoff used to be very innovative. Kazakhstan of all places. And you know, so you look at it and you say, can I defend this valuation? But we've done the work, and every time if you go back over time and you bought it when it was this expensive, after 3 years you always still do well because of that high return on capital. Their return on capital is about 25%. Remember, that compounds 25%, 25, 25, whereas, let's say, Absa is battling to do 15 at this stage. There's a 10% differential in your shareholder value growth. And you've got something like ABN AMRO in Holland that's battling to get to 10 or 9. So a 25% return on shareholder value is very good. And you keep plowing that back into your business. And that's what Capitec is doing. And now very few people know that, but they increased the holding in Everfund, something they've held for a long time, very low, a small holding in Eastern Europe generally, and just been watching, and suddenly they stepped in and bought out everything except, I think, a 2.5% stake, which management still have. And that could be in 3, 5, 10 years' time, another growth area if they just replicate the model they've done here. So Capitec has got a lot of things going forward at the moment. It seems expensive, but a quality company like that always seems expensive.
There's so much in that, and you can hear, as mentioned, the full interview by going on to Biz News and to the Biz News TV channel on YouTube. Interesting story that he mentioned there about Capitec doing a deal that not many people know about in buying out the minority shareholders in a business that they bought in Eastern Europe. Eastern Europe is a very appealing place for South Africans, it appears. We'll hear a little later from Hyprop. That's another company. It released its results today, and it's another company that's investing quite heavily in Eastern Europe. In fact, it said in the results presentation that there were only two preferred investment destinations. The one is the Western Cape, the other one, Eastern Europe. FirstRand's share price, incidentally, is down a little since the results were released last week. It traded at almost 87 Rand a share last week. It's currently trading at 83 Rand, 82 Rand 72, if you want to be exact, a little bit firmer today. But its former child, I guess you could call it, OUTsurance, is doing very well indeed. It was one of the top performers on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange today. Those shares up by 8.2%. And this on financial results that were released today for the year to the end of June. Here's, let me just give you a little bit of background on that. OUTsurance, in case you haven't been watching any television or absorbing any advertising, is an insurance company which offers products here in South Africa, in Australia, and recently it's gone into Ireland. It reported a 19% improvement in headline earnings per share in the year to end June. Profit jumped from 3 billion rand to 4.1 billion rand, and it did so well that it's paying out a special dividend over and above the final dividend of 113 cents. Shareholders can look forward to a bonus of 40 cents a share. The company says it's entering its new financial year, quote, with renewed optimism concerning the prospects of economic progress in the country, underpinned by the Government of National Unity. There it is, that GNU all over again. Let's hear what Corky had to say about it.
Since results come through, very good results, but it's an exceptional company. And every now and then you get a company like OUTsurance that have this exceptional management team that are just innovative, that come with a fresh business model, with fresh technology, and are just taking market share. So with Altsurance, what you're really doing, because it is expensive already relative to, let's say, a Momentum or an Old Mutual, you're saying, do I back this management team to continue growing market share? And in this case, I would, and we are in our own funds, because they've demonstrated the ability to just be innovative, be quicker than the competition, just the whole advertising campaign. The big problem with large players is they find it very difficult to fight against themselves, because often your own business has wide margins in the products you sell. And you don't want to go and cut those profits and give more to consumers. It's a very brave move, but it's the right move. But so along comes somebody like Capitec early years, now Altsurance, and just cuts away by cutting the price that consumers can do business with them. So with Altsurance, done very well. Australia was a bit of a problem initially and still every now and then. But Ireland is, the market was a bit hesitant about Ireland and still is. It's a new market. It's always tough to go into a new market with a new regulator. But the reason why they chose Ireland is because it's a very fragmented market. It means that you either want to go, Yanni Mouton was very good at saying that you either want to go into a market where there are few big lazy players, and you can just attack them because or you want to go into a market where it's very fragmented, nobody's strong, and you can just steal market share from everybody because nobody's big enough to react to you. And Altsurance is one of those. So it's also one, definitely, that you can put in your portfolio, and every 3-5 years, maybe every year, you look back and say, oh, that was a good decision.
Thank you, Corky. Well, something that was a very good decision for us was after my trip to the World Economic Forum in 2022, that was when, just after COVID, there was a summer Davos, as they called it. And the reason that happened was in January, we had another outbreak of another strain of COVID, and the World Economic Forum stopped it and pushed it over to May. First time ever in more than 50 years that it had that. And I had the privilege there of meeting Alex Karp, the chief executive of a company called Palantir. He really impressed me. This man is probably the leading black CEO in the United States of America, absolute genius. And the story that he was able to share with us was one of deep investment into artificial intelligence. Remember, we're going back a couple of years now, at a time that nobody really kind of got onto it yet. We added that share into the BizNews recommended model portfolios at around R8, and it's now sitting at R34 a share. Dollars. Let's do it properly. From $8 to $34 a share. And that is a reflection of the excitement that exists around artificial intelligence. It all kind of came together when an organization called OpenAI brought artificial intelligence to us. We know it all as ChatGPT. And this week, OpenAI has produced new technology called O1. It's like a super smart computer program that thinks harder before it gives answers. It's really good at solving tough problems like math puzzles and science questions by taking its time and coming up with better solutions. So it's a real upgrade on the existing ChatGPT that we're all used to. There's also a smaller, cheaper version called O1 Mini, which is great at writing and fixing computer code, something that anyone who is in the technology field will find a boon. This technology is designed to be safer and more accurate, helping people with tricky tasks, such as scientists doing research or programmers building apps. Our partners at the Financial Times had a look at the upgraded technology on that's brought through by OpenAI. Here's the FT News Briefing's host, Misha Frankel-Duval, and he was talking with the FT's artificial intelligence editor, Madhumita Murgia.
The company behind ChatGPT has launched a set of new artificial intelligence models, which it claims are capable of reasoning, OpenAI says the new technology, known as O1, performs at about the same level as PhD students when carrying out tasks in physics, chemistry, and biology. Here to tell us more is Marumita Merger, who covers artificial intelligence for the FT. How big of a deal is this breakthrough?
One of the holy grails of trying to build AI systems is to create a software that can be logical, that can plan ahead, and can do step-by-step reasoning. We've seen examples of this in previous systems, but seeing how well this particular model, the O1, is performing against previous generations of OpenAI software is a pretty big step towards creating an artificial general intelligence, which is a software that could, in a human-like way, you know, solve very general problems, which would be a major research breakthrough.
And just give me the backstory on these models. Is O1 an evolution of more familiar tools like ChatGPT, or is it something different entirely?
Well, they are selling it as something entirely different. OpenAI really has focused O1 models on solving hard problems. So in particular, they've seen really good results with things like mathematical problems, debugging code, or coming up with sort of solutions to scientific hypotheses and problems. So it's quite sort of focused currently on these technical and scientific areas that are, you know, gnarly and difficult to solve for even very clever humans.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but maths used to be a bit of a problem for ChatGPT.
That's true. So in general, large language models haven't been particularly good at maths because they aren't calculators, right? They're not understanding the principles behind mathematics and then giving you an answer. You know, the way that they work is by predicting what should come next based on all of the data that they've been trained on. So they're really good at sort of predicting words and code when they've seen lots of that, but not particularly good at sort of giving you the right answer to a mathematical problem, even some pretty simple ones. Definitely the O1 models far outperformed their previous models when it came to these sort of scientific, mathematical, and coding problems where you have to do step-by-step reasoning through the problem to come to a solution.
So O1 is the next big step here for AI. But do these new models pose any new risks?
So I spoke with Joshua Bengio, who's one of the sort of godfathers of deep learning. And his major concern is that as you have AI with more advanced capabilities, it's natural that they come with increased risks of misuse, particularly in the hands of bad actors. OpenAI itself has actually called out a particular risk, which is the ability to create bioweapons. And they've classified O1 as having a medium risk, which is the highest that they've ever assigned to any of their models previously. And what they've said is that these new models have a medium risk for issues related to chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear weapons. So essentially, it means that if you're an expert, so not an amateur like you or me who has no idea about any of this, but if you happen to be an expert in this area, then the technology makes it much easier for you to go away and create these types of bioweapons.
Marumita Merger is the FT's artificial intelligence editor.
Well, that's really one of the big risks, isn't it? That artificial intelligence gets smarter than human beings. And the robots decide to take over the world. One of the big problems reading through some of the content on BizNews Premium today, and indeed from our partners in the UK, The Economist and The Financial Times, is that with this fight between China and the United States, and one that's likely to get even worse if Donald Trump were to get elected, they are no longer paying attention to the two big issues of the moment, and that's climate change. Okay, some people have different views on that. But the other one is unregulated artificial intelligence. It's developing so rapidly that AI could become a real threat to humanity. And it's been articulated by Yuval Noah Harari in a number of his books, where he warns that the future could be a very dangerous place. I guess that's what's driving Elon Musk as well. You might not know this, but Elon Musk was one of the original creators of ChatGPT. He left there because he wasn't happy at the way that it was commercializing, and he felt becoming dangerous for the future of humanity. And it also reinforced his whole view of getting a man on Mars so that mankind or Homo sapiens would always have an escape hatch were the worst to happen. Whew, I'm going into strange areas now. But let's go back to what's happening on the local stock markets. And today, property group Hyprop Investments reported a 24% drop in its headline earnings per share for the year to end June. The dividend's been cut from 299 cents to 280 cents, while stated net asset value is down 5% to 60 rand and 32 cents. Now remember that, 60 rand 32 cents, that's a 37% premium to the current share price, which rose today by about 4% to 43 rand 81. So now look at that. If you are buying a rand's worth of Hyprop assets, it's only costing you 63 cents. That's the theory anyway. Hyprop says it's progressing with its exit from sub-Saharan Africa, having signed sale agreements for the portfolio. It's investing aggressively into Eastern Europe. It says the balance sheet's got a loan-to-value ratio of 36.4%. That's like having a home loan on a house worth a million rand, but the loan is only for 360,000 rand. So you can see it's quite well covered. It's got strong liquidity and reduced borrowings in euro. The company says the worst is behind it, and it anticipates an improvement of at least 4% in the 2025 payout, that's i.e. in the next year. It's sitting at a juicy dividend yield of about 13%. And again, it reckons that Eskom ending load shedding and the government of national unity are the reasons why you can start getting bullish on property in South Africa. Here's Corky Kooyman's take on Hyprop.
Property companies are also in the financial sector, and they definitely benefit from lower interest rates. Again, also because credit demand and growth picks up. And I've noticed a few of the property companies in the results started saying that suddenly vacancy levels are dropping very sharply. And, you know, that goes straight to the bottom line of a good company when your vacancy levels start falling. And so growth is always good for property companies as well, especially because property companies post-COVID have come off such a low base. Those were mostly the 3-5 hardest years where you had work from home, you had higher unemployment. So on, all those trends are starting to reverse. Almost every large company I read about is starting to dictate to employees, work from home is over. Yeah, you've got to come back to the office. We want you here. And that obviously is good for your property occupancies. Also, from the point of view, just imagine a large organization, JP Morgan. JP Morgan has, I don't know, let's say 5,000 people that work at its head office in New York. It said there were only 1,000 coming in, now 5,000. Suddenly all the coffee shops in the surrounding area, all the pizza places, they all start doing better. You get shifted away from the smaller local areas where people live, the suburbs. But it's a property company, generally in your bigger centers and generally do well and will do well, I think, in the current environment.
I'm not so sure that Corky's got it right, that the staffers are going to be going back into offices. Certainly that is what big companies want, or managers want, I guess. But we're seeing from many areas that people are pretty comfortable at home, and they're saving a fortune by not having to do the daily commute. Well, the markets today, the All Share Index on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange had a nice session. It dipped towards the end, but was rising throughout most of the session and finished 1.25% stronger, the top 40, 1.2% higher. And it was across the board, industrials, financials, and resources all having a similar improvement, with mid-caps, interestingly enough, that's the area that Piet Viljoen suggested that we should be looking at and doing our homework on at the BizNews conference last Thursday. They were up by 1.75%, so outperforming slightly on the rest. But the big mover today on the opening of the American markets was Bitcoin, 5% stronger. It's now sitting at $60,000, just over $60,000, up nearly $3,000 today. So Bitcoin going in the right direction at the moment. As far as individual shares are concerned, Well, I've already given you some insight into the big mover there in OUTsurance. Anglo Platinum and Impala Platinum continue to go better. I'm sure that Si Jacobs is happy about that. Again, at the BizNews conference, he said he's been putting 361's investments into Platinum shares, and Amplats 3.7%, Implats, well, both the same by that amount. They're coming off a very low base. Woolworths up 3%, Mondi had a 3% gain, and Bidvest 2.75%. Standard Bank also had a good session today, up by 2.5%. On the other side, a British American Tobacco was a bit weaker. That was down by about 3%, but it was a particularly good day for the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, which is what you see when the markets do as well as they reportedly did, up by 1.25%. Interestingly enough, the Rand, well, that was a little bit firmer today as well. So lots of movements on the investment markets. The Rand improving 17 Rand 64 against the US dollar. It's still over 23 against the pound. And the gold price, $2,571 an ounce as we speak. The big story, though, as far as investing is concerned, is interest rates tomorrow. What's going to happen with the Federal Reserve? Our partners at Bloomberg had a look at that, and we will close off today's program with this clip from Caroline Hepke, who is from Bloomberg and spoke to a couple of experts.
Bond traders are more divided about the outcome of this week's Federal Reserve meeting than any scheduled U.S. central bank decision since 2007. Fed policymakers have all but guaranteed a first rate cut in more than 4 years. But with just a day to go, markets are showing a toss-up between a quarter point and a half point reduction. Bill Dudley, a former president of the New York Fed and Bloomberg opinion columnist, is calling for 50.
Doing 25 would have been awkward. Because it would have disappointed market expectations. They probably would have shown only another 50 basis points in their summary and out projections. So the Fed would be essentially saying we're only going to do 75 basis points this year when the market was priced for about 120. So I think doing 50 brings the Fed more in alignment with the market, and it also fits the logic of the moment.
But not everyone agrees with Bill Dudley's assessment, including the CEO of PIMCO, Manny Roman.
Well, we're in the camp of 25, but, you know, I always say we have a crystal ball, and at the end of the day, we'll see what the market does. You know, it may very well be that it doesn't make that much of a difference, and our view is that there will be three cuts of 25, and at the end of the day, what matters is where we are at the end of the year.
And PIMCO's Manny Roman isn't alone in his view. Apollo co-president Scott Kleinman has warned that investors are placing overly high expectations on the scale of Fed cuts in the coming year.
Interesting stuff. Big day tomorrow. It will happen after we go off air, but we will be bringing you some inside stories there on Thursday. Of course, the South African Reserve Bank also meets this week. And that's on Thursday. The Monetary Policy Committee of the Reserve Bank meets every 2 months, and they're meeting Wednesday, Thursday, and they will be hopefully also cutting interest rates in this country. The anticipation there is 25 basis points or a quarter of a percent. And why should we be excited about this? Well, go and listen to any of the experts, and they will explain to you that when interest rates drop, it does stimulate economic activity across the board. And that's something that we know in our country we need quite badly. This is Alec Hogg from BizNews. Look forward to being back in your company same time, same place tomorrow. Thanks for joining us.